Welcome everyone to the first edition of the Jetstream off-season edition, and what a way to start it. We're joined today by an ex-Jets player, a player who made 56 appearances for the Jets between 2011 and 2013. He scored the equal second most A-League goals for the club with 19 and provided 14 goal assists during his time with the club. He's also a Newcastle United old boy, having played for the club between 2002 and 2004 starting his overseas adventures. Welcome to the Jetstream, Ryan Griffiths.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate you giving the time.
Yeah, I'll find any time for Novocastrian.
Oh, really good. All right. So we're going to take a look back over your time with the club. Encounters both playing in a Jet shirt. But before we get to that, let's talk about the time when you, I guess, played against the Jets. Your first encounter with the Jets incarnation of the club was in the Asian Champions League back in 2009. You were playing for Beijing Guoan FC at the time. How competitive were the Jets against, I guess, you as the eventual Chinese Super League winners at the time?
Yeah, they were very competitive, actually. Our team, to be honest, went into the games thinking that we were going to pretty much dominate the Jets the whole time, and went into it with a bit of a cocky attitude. I, for one, wasn't one of those. But, yeah, you know, obviously over there we beat the Jets 1-0, and which is...
You managed to score?
I mean, what was it? It was 2-1, was it? Geez, it was a long time ago.
I don't have the stats in front of me.
2-0, I think. Anyway, 2-0, I'm pretty sure. And then we lost to the Jets back at home. Sean Rooney scored a cracker. And, yeah, it was definitely a tough encounter.
Yeah, I think Sash got two goals in that game as well. Or did Sash get one goal? I don't remember. But... look, you managed to score both in the home and away leg against the Jets. Was it a weird feeling playing and scoring against the team that you previously made appearances for, even though it was back in the old NSL?
Yeah, I moved up when I was 21 years old, actually. So, yeah, it was definitely a tough situation when I scored that goal against the Jets at home and also there. But when I was in Beijing, it was, you know, my first game for the Beijing Greens and scored my first goal and, 50,000 supporters there. So it was pretty hard not to celebrate that goal. But on the other hand, when I returned to Newcastle, yeah, it was a bit of a strange feeling. We had a lot of friends playing in the other team. Obviously, the Jets, Adam was playing as a defender. And, yeah, it was just really... unusual to score because it feels like my home, Newcastle, and it still is, you know. Obviously, I've got my family pretty much there now, living in Newcastle, so, yeah, it's still held really close to my heart.
Okay, well, we'll move on from your time with Beijing and jump ahead almost 2 years to when you signed for the Jets in late 2010 on originally an 18-month contract. What brought the move from Beijing about and what prompted you to sign for the Jets at that point in your career where, I guess, at 28, you would be considered to be in the prime of your career?
Yeah, it was. It wasn't an easy decision. I had my first son was just born, and it was really hard for me to see him whilst I was in Beijing, and my contract was coming to an end. And I got a lot of other offers from Chinese Super League clubs to remain in China, and obviously we all know what the salaries are that they pay over in China, so it was really hard for me to come home. But it was an easy decision because I was coming home for pretty much my new family and to have all the resources and everything that you have in Australia that you don't get over in China. So that was one of the main reasons why I came back. And when I saw the offer there from Newcastle Jets, it was really easy for me to decide because I didn't want to go to, you know, Sydney, Adelaide, you know, Brisbane or any other club that also had offers. I just wanted to play for Newcastle, and it was a no-brainer. So yeah, I gave up a lot in terms of financial needs and came back home to represent the Jets.
Well, you signed at the time with the intent of replacing Francis Jeffers because he was playing with the club on a 10-game guest stint at the time, and you guys didn't overlap. Was that the case when you signed for the club?
No, I don't think it had anything to do with Francis Jeffers. I think it was I just spoke to Gary Van Egmond. I mean, not Gary Van Egmond, Branko. And he wanted me back. Robbie Middleby was there at the time, and he wanted me back. So, yeah, I don't think it had anything to do with players leaving. It was just, probably did, but I didn't think that it did. And that wasn't a reason why I was coming back, because whilst I was there, they were also talking about renewing Francis Jeffers' contract. So that was after I'd signed. So I don't think it had anything to do with that.
Yep. Okay. So you signed for the club and you make your debut. Do you remember who your home debut was against? Well, your debut actually was against. It was at home.
Melbourne Heart?
No. It was against Sydney FC.
Was that at Sydney or was it up in Newcastle?
No, that one was at Hunter Stadium. It was a fairly decent crowd that day, but I don't know if you remember. Unfortunately, we walked away with a 2-1 loss that day, and look, things really haven't got much better for us against Sydney SC as time's gone on. Do you remember anything about the match? I mean, you're struggling. You don't remember who we played against, but does anything stand out that match?
Not in that match, no. I definitely remember playing against Sydney FC. One thing I do remember about playing Sydney FC is that we always had a great turnout when we were playing them down at the SFS. And that game where Del Piero and Heskey played, it was their debuts for their first time that they came up against each other. And the crowd was huge and it was just an amazing atmosphere. And I think there was more Jets fans than Sydney FC fans, and that was definitely something I'll remember. I've got pictures of that and videos of that, so I guess that's why I remember it so well.
We'll come on to that match a little bit later on, but there are a couple of quite memorable matches that you were involved in against Sydney FC, and that was one of them. Look, unfortunately, we weren't successful, or the club weren't successful in that first match, but 5 days later, you got off the mark with the third goal and a 3-1 win over North Queensland, up in North Queensland.
Yep.
Do you remember the goal? Yes. Also managed to actually provide an assist that match too.
Did I?
talk us through the goal.
The goal, that was the cross from Tarek, wasn't it?
I don't remember.
And it was with my right foot. It was a volley and I hit it with my right foot. I think I closed my eyes.
All good strikers do, don't they?
I'm pretty sure the ball came over from Tarek. I closed my eyes, I volleyed it, and it went into the top corner, and then I opened my eyes. And that was it.
Look, being, I guess, you signed with the job of scoring and providing goals, how important was it to score so early in your Jets career?
Oh, pretty much every club you go to, getting that first goal just gets the monkey off the back, as they say, and It's so true. It's really, really difficult as a striker, especially in clubs. When I was in Rapid Bucharest and I'd signed there and it was a big transfer, and the pressure that amounts on you as a player is just unbelievable. And people say, you know, oh, I'd love to be a footballer and things like that. But when you deal with that pressure and you're away from home, your family's not there, you don't have anyone to talk to, brand new club, yeah, getting that first goal is everything. And once you get that, your confidence starts to build and you start to build relationships with your teammates, and that you get respect from the fans and the club, and it becomes a lot easier.
So how have you managed to deal with those expectations? You spoke then about your transfer to Bucharest, and how have you coped with that pressure in the past?
Sometimes I don't. Sometimes you just have to. It's pretty much the same as if you're not happy at your job, or if you're not doing well at your job, no matter what industry you're in. It's something you just have to deal with. And if you don't deal with it, you get cut. And that's pretty much the cutthroat business that I'm in. And I know that in any job, it's probably not as cutthroat as what a footballer's life or a manager in football is. So, yeah, it's not easy. And to deal with it, yeah, you got family that can help you, especially speaking to, you know, your girlfriend or your father or your mother or someone like that can help you and just tell you that everything's okay pretty much. And I'm not afraid to admit that.
No, but it's really good to get that insight, because it's something that a lot of people just wonder how players deal with this. And we see you as players, I guess, maybe 2 hours a week. And after all, you are human and you do experience pressure and expectations, as we all do. So thank you for that insight. That's excellent. I guess going back to your first season, you signed very late on in the year. I think it was round 21. And I guess that season for the Jets ended in disappointment. After being in contention for the top six, the Jets went on to lose 5 of the last 7 matches and only getting 1 win in that time, being a 4-0 demolition of Perth. How difficult was it at the end of the season for the club to be in such a promising position, and then what went wrong at the end of that first season?
The first season, I can't understand how a team like that doesn't qualify. We had some amazing players in that team, and most of us were over the age of, you know, 25 that had a little bit of experience under our belts. So I can't really understand how a team with that, you know, that quality can't get through. And the only thing that I can come back to is what I've learned from my experience is that when a club's not functioning properly on and off the pitch, then it's going to, you know, it's going to prove to be really bad on the pitch, because if somebody's not happy, or it could be just the smallest of things, and these things just start to build up and snowball, and it just becomes a big thing. So I know at the time there was a lot of uncertainty over players staying and going, and it does affect other players, because if it is one of their friends that's not getting re-signed or that's getting treated badly, then it's going to you know, have an effect on the whole team.
Did the club handle those sorts of situations well during your time there with the re-signing and the negotiations of contracts?
Never. And I can say that honestly, never did they do that properly. And sometimes it's, as a footballer, like I just mentioned before, it's cutthroat. And a lot of the players, you know, they put everything into these games, and then to kind of get slapped in the face or pushed out over a little bit more, maybe more money that they've asked for, or just something, you know, like maybe they can pay for their car for the year or something really minute, can be the reason why the club doesn't re-sign them. And one club that I do see that is doing that properly is when I had my short stint at Adelaide. They were fantastic. Everything was looked after. The management was fantastic. I'm not to say that that's not happening at the Jets now, because I'm not sure what's happening there. But everything was fantastic. The way they dealt with the players, Marcello Carusca, for example, he was their marquee player. And he had offers from China and Turkey, everywhere, and they managed to keep him, you know. And look what they've done. They've just won the championship. They won the premiership. They trust their coach. That's another massive thing. They trust their coach. They employ somebody. They give him the time. They give him the resources. And, you know, you saw Adelaide at the start of the season. They were getting hammered. And then they just trusted in him. The same as Josip when I was there, Josip Gombau. They trusted him. They gave him the resources, and he started producing really good football. When I played for Adelaide, it felt like I wasn't even breathing. It felt like I wasn't running, I should say. And, you know, obviously everything just become easy because of the style of football that they were playing. And off the pitch was fantastic, and on the pitch was obviously fantastic as well. So it's something you really need to to wean out all those people that are in it for themselves up there in Newcastle. There are a lot of them that just need to think about the grand scheme of things and not just about themselves, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's a great segue into my next question. The following off-season was unlike one that the Jets had experienced with the announcement that we'd signed Jason Kallena to be our marquee. Unfortunately, he never made an appearance for the club due to his injury. And just days before the kickoff, Nathan Tinkler, who had come in the previous season as the Jets owner, sacked both Jason and his father, Branko, who was the coach at the time. The season kicked off, I guess, with one of the most exciting matches that I can remember at Hunter Stadium. The Jets won 3-2 after going behind to Melbourne Heart. And after a period, and then you scored two goals in that first half to send us into the Sheds 2-1 up. Do you remember who popped up for the 90th minute winner for the Jets in that match?
Was it Kim?
Left back?
Yeah. Bjorn.
Yeah, Bjorny.
Yeah.
He'd end up going on to score two Oggies later in the season, but we'll talk about that.
Weren't they good Oggies too?
How much of an impact did the departure of Branko have on the playing group being so close to the beginning of the season?
That was just bizarre, wasn't it? It was just before the first game, and none of us could pretty much comprehend that it actually happened. Obviously, it's going to take a big impact because you do a preseason for, especially in Australia, it's like 6 month preseason. And you're learning a style of play and developing a style of play as a team, and then all of a sudden get sacked, and then you've got a new manager in there, and you have to try and adapt to the style of play that they want. So you can imagine how hard that would be for a team.
Yeah, look, but I guess it was a great way to kick off the season with that 3-2 win under interim coach Craig Deans. What was the feeling like in the dressing room after that? Because I just remember the crowd just erupting, and the stadium was really full back in those days because the price of season memberships had been drastically reduced, so it got a lot of people through the gate. I just remember the place going off. How were the team after that?
Yeah, it was really good atmosphere, and like I said, with everything that had happened prior to that, it was it was a huge relief. And also, you know, like Melbourne Heart had a good team there, and a lot of those players have gone on to do big and better things, and some of those players have developed into fantastic players. So, yeah, I think winning that game was huge.
A couple of weeks after that, Gary Van Egmond was reappointed for his second stint as manager of the Jets. How was Gary's appointment received by the playing group?
It was received well. And Gary obviously had a good history with Newcastle, so yeah, it was pretty easy for the committee to appoint him as a coach.
Mm. Did much change in the way that Gary wanted you to play when compared to how Branko wanted things done?
Yeah, much different. Gary's very technical, and sometimes a lot of players can't comprehend that into the game. Branko's a lot more about, you know, heart, passion and things like that. So when you've got two, you know, different styles of managing, then some people are going to perceive it as good and some are going to take it as bad. So, yeah, everyone definitely took it and tried their best to play the way that he wanted to play.
Yeah. Move forward a bit into that season. Harry Kewell was a major off-season signing for not just the A-League, not just for Melbourne Victory, but for the A-League in general. His first visit to Hunter Stadium drew over 17,000 to the match. And as the team walked out, a massive red, blue and gold Newcastle tifo was unveiled by the squadron. I don't know if you remember it or not.
Yeah, I remember that. It's fantastic.
You scored twice that game in a 3-1 win for the Jets after you came from behind. Something I remember about that match was the intensity that the team had was something that I hadn't seen for a while, and it seemed like the playing group was really up for that occasion. Was that the case, and was it something that you recall speaking about as a team in the lead-up to that match?
We always seem to do well against Melbourne teams, and myself especially. I think I scored most of my goals against Melbourne teams. But, whenever we played against bigger teams or teams that were doing well, I should say, then we definitely rose, and especially against Brisbane as well. Whenever we played Brisbane away, we drew with them. We nearly we beat them 1-0 up there at Suncorp, and that was massive. That was pretty much after they broke their record.
Yep.
So that was massive as well. So I think it was just when we all got together and really put in and played as a unit, then it's like any team, they can do well. So that's what we did every time we came up against teams that were doing well.
Unfortunately, that was really a peak for the team, and the momentum couldn't be sustained from that match. And we started, the club started to experience a number of mixed results, resulting in 2 wins from the next 10. Despite this, though, at that stage, we still sat on the edge of the top six, and then came a match that we didn't quite speak about, but against Sydney FC, where the Jets absolutely ran riot, winning 5-2 in one of our best away performances that I can ever remember. I was at that match, and we were just having so much fun. And would you class that as probably the best performance that the team played? And if not, what performance would you say is the best performance that you played in?
Yeah, well, we definitely ran riot. It's hard to say what the best performance is, because you can take it on two different ways, because defensively, that one that I mentioned up in Suncorp where we won 1-0, I think Francis Jeffers got the winner. That was massive. Against a team that was doing so well, that was undefeated for so long, and were playing away from home as a unit, I think that was probably the best performance we'd done. Obviously, when you score more goals and it's more entertaining for the spectators, then you know that's better for football and for the promotion of football in Australia. But yeah, I'd have to say that one in Suncorp was my favourite. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's a really interesting perspective. Jumping back to the Sydney game, I remember the whole team coming and celebrating with the fans afterwards. Do you remember anything much from that game, the 5-2 win?
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, when you play so many games, they do blur into one. But it's something I always remember is going to the fans, winning or losing, and just appreciating that they make the effort to come down to support us. And sometimes they go as far as Adelaide and Perth to support us. So, yeah, it's always something that I think every player should do and respect the fans that come and watch.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, look, it was around that time as well that you re-signed with the Jets for another 2 seasons, despite reported interest from other clubs. Can you talk about which clubs were in for you at the time and why you chose to stay in Newcastle?
Yeah, it's really hard to talk about other clubs, because I never really considered going to any other clubs, like I mentioned before. So, yeah, for me it was either Newcastle or nothing, and I'm pretty sure that a lot of people would understand that as I really tried, especially in Australia, to stay loyal to one team. I know I played for Adelaide for the 3-month stint, but that was because the Jets didn't want me to come back. So that was a little bit disappointing on my, you know, for myself, not being wanted to come home, especially when I'm, you know, 31, still playing decent and. But that's...
Still felt like you had something to offer?
Oh, well, definitely. I'm still going now, aren't I?
Exactly right.
So it's... When the offer came up for me to actually leave, it was at a period where the Nathan Tinkler group pretty much said to us, go and find another club. And that was pretty much the reason why I did leave to go back to China. It wasn't to do with anything else. Obviously, you're helping your family by being secure with a contract. And when you get told from your own club that, you know, we don't want you guys to stay anymore pretty much, and, you know, you're not getting paid your superannuation and, you know, little nasty things like that, then it's going to be hard. And if I recall, I'm pretty sure we didn't get paid for a month. So I'm sure everyone that would be in that situation would do the same thing.
Yeah, I agree. You certainly you want to try and remain loyal to an employer, but if they don't want you, then what else can you do? And certainly if they're not treating you well, then most people, I'm sure, would make that same decision. And it's interesting that you talk about that, because the season where you did re-sign with the club, you had what I would class as an excellent season. You had 9 goals, and you were the equal top scorer with Jeremy Brockie at the time. Jeremy would end up leaving the club at the end of that season. Despite all of this, the Jets again missed out on the finals. And on paper, there were some excellent players in that team, from the likes of your Jeremy Brockies, yourself, Topor Stanley, Haliti, Elrich, Ali Abbas, Casey Wim, and Ruben Zadkovic, to name but a few. What do you think were the reason behind the Jets' inconsistencies that year? And do you think that is it a big disappointment that the club didn't make finals that year?
Yeah, it was. It was a big disappointment. Playing with Jeremy was fantastic. We had a very good relationship, and we still do. So that was really enjoyable. The next year he wasn't there with us. But, yeah, I don't know. I think there was a lot of personality clashing within the group, and also with the manager, and a lot of external things. The fans weren't happy with some players that were playing and some players that weren't playing. And there was, there's no excuse when you don't get results, but it doesn't help when there's problems internally.
Yeah, okay. The next season, again, we had another major off-season recruit. This time we signed late into the preseason, Emil Heskey. I guess it was a controversial off-season, because Gary made a number of significant changes and chose to replace the likes of release the likes of Jeremy Brockie, Nikolai Topol-Stanley, Labby Haliti, Tarik Elrich, Ali Abbas, and Casey Wehrman, who had, I guess, had publicly fallen out with the club. And we chose to replace those guys with the likes of, Craig Goodwin, Josh Berlante, Adam Taggett, Mitch Cooper, young players that would have been deemed to have had potential. Was there a sense that the club could still achieve something with the amount of young players and young blood that was being injected into the team at the time?
Yeah, definitely. Bringing young players in, like those players that you just mentioned, is fantastic. You look at what they've done now. But the problem is that we don't hold on to them, and we let them go and develop. I mean, look at Craig Goodwin. He was fantastic for us.
He's a perfect example.
Yeah, he came on off the bench a lot when I was there and just spun games around. I remember just giving him the ball and letting him do what he wanted, and he just produced wonders. So Adam Taggett, okay, he's gone to Fulham. It's a big difference, and he did well for the club. So you kept him for an extra year or two, and he ended up being the golden boot, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, so
that's what you need to do. Yeah, he played 2 seasons for the club.
Yeah, and then you can let him go after that. So he did well for the club. But yeah, letting those players go, and another example is letting players go that really want to stay. I know so many players that really wanted to stay at the Jets, and they've gone off to Sydney FC or whatever for whatever reason. I'm sure they've got their own reasons, but yeah, bringing those young players in, but you definitely need to have some experience in the team that's going to guide and to have that leadership. So I think in that year we had a good combination of both. And
We still had the likes of Joe Wheelhouse, Ruben Zadkovic running around. So Thiago Calvano was still in the heart of defence, as I guess as an older older player. And then we had the likes of Scott Neville, who was coming through. He'd had a rough first season, but what was that, his first season? I can't remember.
Yeah,
but,
it was.
It was interesting because, one of my questions was going to be, did the departures of the experience, so many experienced players, concern you? But it's really interesting to hear how exciting some of these young you personally felt having these young players come through. And I guess their enthusiasm probably helped the Jets get off to what would be their best ever start to a year. And we come to that match that was down at the Sydney Football Stadium, the 3-2 win over Sydney in the ADP versus Emil Heskey match. And that match was really exciting to be at as a player. And what do you remember about that match, playing against a football legend in Del Piero?
I loved playing that game. I remember everything. I remember the build-up leading to the game. I remember being on the bus sitting next to Emil and just thinking, I can't wait to play with this guy in front of this crowd. And I'm pretty sure that game, he scored as well, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Craig, I think Goodwin got one. You got one as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I got a goal off the corner. Yeah, so that was just an amazing game, and it was really good to be involved in. And I've seen a lot of games like that since for the A-League, but I haven't seen too many involving Newcastle. So it would be nice to have, Newcastle get that experience again, and not experience that entertainment again that they pretty much deserve. It's been a while.
How was it playing with Emil Heskey? I mean, he's played with some massive clubs overseas in England, and had a really good career. And how was he off the field? What did he bring to the club in terms of coaching or providing advice to some of the younger players?
Yeah, he was brilliant. Such a nice, humble guy off the field. And as a professional, he was probably the best professional I've ever seen. He kept his body in good shape. His diet was unbelievable. When most of the boys were eating Burger King at the airport, he'd be eating, sumo salads with with just, full of nutrients and things like that. So it kind of even opened my eyes to changing diets and things like that. And I think he's 38 years old now and he's still going. So, it does play a big part being a good professional. And I think a lot of the boys at the time didn't realise that that's the reason why he was successful as a player.
You were on fire again in what would be your last season with the Jets, scoring 9 goals and providing 8 assists. And we've talked about your move to Beijing Baxi and the goings-on at the club. Since then, since you left the Baxi, you then briefly returned to the A-League, and we've touched on that with Adelaide. After that, you returned back to Asia with Sarawak. Have I pronounced that correctly?
Yeah, Sarawak.
Yep.
Yep.
And after that as well, last year, just as recently as last year, there were also reports with you being considered as an injury replacement for the Jets. It was reported that you were disappointed not to be contacted about your availability. Did you approach the club directly, or were there no interest from the club with looks at bringing you back, because you were a free agent at the time?
That was in the period of Adelaide, wasn't it? Because Scott Neville was injured, and I think I was going to go in as an injury replacement. But, like I said, I did ask the club. I said, I'm available if you want me to come. And, it wasn't to be. So I moved on. And I had to do something. Had to get an income. I think at that time it was like 4 months without an income from anywhere. And the only club that, I had offers from Malaysian clubs, but I couldn't go to a Malaysian club because I was playing in a second division team in China. So they had some type of rule. So what I needed to do was to come back to Australia, sign a contract with the top league, and then I could continue my move on to Sarawak. So it was a little loophole that I had to do. But I was very tempted to stay in Adelaide and to play for them. But yep. I already had my focus on moving to Malaysia.
With your experience with the Chinese league and the strong rumours that the Jets are about to be purchased by a Chinese businessman or business group, the Ledman Group, what do you think the club, the fans, the players can expect to see from the experience, from your experiences with the Chinese league and the way they go about their football?
I'm not sure the ins and outs of what's going to happen, but yeah, Chinese run their clubs a lot differently to A-League clubs. A-League clubs are really professional. Everything's, you know, looked after. You've got a PFA installed. You get paid on time. Sometimes when you play in China, a lot of these clubs, they don't pay you on time. They don't pay you for, you know, 3 months at some stages. So I really hope that there's a lot of, rules are put in place if an international club does take over. I know Brisbane Roar had a few problems just recently. So it's something that, you know, the governing body of football in Australia needs to look into. And not just saying, oh, well, they're going to splash a lot of cash here and that's that, because we've seen what's happened with people that splash cash and they think that they're the king of the world, not to mention the Gold Coast United owner or our previous owner. So you've got to have people that are in it for the long haul and that are in it for the love of football. And there's a lot of people out there and – you know, syndicates or companies that love football and will put their happily invest their money into the game.
Very true. It's interesting to see what lies ahead for the club, because certainly this would about be the last chance that the club get, because I don't know whether the fans can take much more, let alone the FFA having to, I guess, continue to bail out teams from Newcastle. But look, it's a football is a massive part of this region, and it's really important that the decision that is made is the right decision, and they can actually start to utilise and leverage off the massive football base that is in this region.
Yeah.
So, look, couple of quick questions before we finish up, getting to know you better, I guess. Do you have any pre-game rituals or superstitions? And if so, what are they?
I used to have some ridiculous ones, but now I kind of go against my rituals now. I do it deliberately. I'm like, no, I'm not going to be sucking into this this behaviour. So sometimes I do stupid things like putting my left shin pad on first, so I deliberately go against them. Wearing my favorite pair of underpants or socks before the game, and you know, you can really get carried away with how stupid some superstitions are. Now my superstition is eating well, having a good night's sleep, and just really looking after myself before the game, and that's made a huge difference in my games, and my, you know, I don't feel tired after games anymore, and I 34 years old and still going. So I guess that's something I'm going to continue to do.
Good. I don't know about putting the left shin pad on first or having – because, look, I only played at all age level, but they're the sorts of things that when I was on a scoring streak, they're the things that I used to do.
Yeah.
I used to have to think back and go, oh, what side were my socks on that day? Sitting next to me on the bench.
Yeah.
But look, so it's not that stupid. Or maybe, I don't know. Okay, then what's the weirdest pregame superstition you've seen a fellow player do?
Oh, what is – oh, I'll tell you one thing is I was whistling before a game when I was in National Bucharest, and I was just whistling, just being happy and going about my business, getting change for the game. And one of the players said, "Oh, don't whistle in the change room." I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "It's bad luck. Oh, we're going to lose for sure." And we're playing Dinamo Bucharest, which was, at the time, was coming first. And I was thinking, is this guy crazy or what? I'm just happy. I'm whistling. So then that game, I got a hat trick, and we won, and we beat them. So, yeah, so much for superstitions. But some people, yeah, obviously have just outrageous superstitions. I wish I could think of one at the moment, but I just can't, sorry.
No, that's all right. That's a pretty good story.
Yeah.
During your time with the club, who was the best dresser and who was the worst?
The best dresser? Oh, well, the worst is Michael Bridges.
Okay.
You cannot compare anyone to Michael Bridges. He used to wear I wouldn't even know what to call it, a jacket, and it had a huge dragon on the back of it, and he just thought it was the best. It was white. It was like white leather, or like a fake leather or pleather or something, whatever you call it. And maybe wear a pair of shorts with that or something ridiculous. So, yeah, he was definitely the worst. And the best day-to-day would be probably Tarek Elrich or Sam Galloway.
Yeah, right.
Those two boys tended to look after themselves really well.
Look, I'll tell a story about Michael Bridges. I've just finished I was lent from my neighbour a Harry Hill DVD that was shot back in probably 2004, 2005. Probably 2004. It was just before the year that Liverpool went on to win the Champions League. And there was some footage of him out playing golf, and one of the people he was with was Michael Bridges, and happened to miss a one-foot putt, and just the laughing and the carrying on was very interesting. But look, he managed to be dressed okay there. He didn't have a white jacket with a big dragon on the back, but that's really interesting. We'll have to hit him up on Twitter to see if he's still got it.
No, he probably does. I think he's got it stored away, probably waiting for it to come back in fashion.
Yeah, it's never going to.
No, I don't think so.
If you weren't playing football, what do you reckon you'd be doing?
I do a lot of trading, like stocks outside of football already. So I'm already doing that, so I probably would be doing that full time.
Regular Wolf of Wall Street?
I wouldn't say I'm a Wolf of Wall Street. I don't do that much drugs, and I don't steal or embezzle or anything like that. So, no.
Fair enough.
Straight down the line, straighty 180, stock trader.
Which player in world football would you most like to play alongside?
Oof. Zlatan.
Zlatan?
Yeah. Everyone loves Zlatan.
I think about everyone does.
Everybody.
Do you reckon he'll end up at United?
I hope so. It'd be good entertainment. It'll bring a little bit of life back to United. He's just a fabulous player as well. Like he can back up his arrogance, and that's something I really admire. And it's not like he's arrogant trying to be a hero. He's arrogant trying to have a laugh, and that's another reason why I love him. And talking about dealing with pressure, he does it a really good way, and yeah, it's just entertaining. You need these characters in football.
Certainly do. Final question, which stadium would you most love to run out on?
Probably Anfield. I'd love to.
Good answer.
Yeah, I'd love to run out there and hear the Never Walk Alone, and yeah, I think the history in that stadium and the atmosphere there is just incredible. I don't think anywhere can compare to it, unless you're going to, you know, South America where you've got those fanatical fans and they're just jumping and the stadium's rocking. That's a different type of atmosphere, and that's pretty much scary for me. I don't think I'd want to run out on that pitch. If I missed a penalty or a goal or something, yeah, I don't want to be on the other end of that.
No, it'd be pretty intense.
Yeah.
All right, so you are still playing. You're currently playing for South China FC in the Hong Kong Premier League, and the Premier League at the moment is over.
Yep.
But you're still in the AFC Cup. How are the team going? And more importantly, how are you performing?
Yeah, we're doing well. The group stage performing. Yeah, I got 3 goals from the group stage, so that's not too bad. And then we just qualified through to the quarters now. So, yeah, it's pretty big for this club, and I'm happy to be a part of it. Hopefully we can – we've drawn JDT, who won the AFC Cup last year.
Yep.
So, yeah, really hoping that we can get a result against them. No, it's not going to be easy, but the way that we're playing in the AFC, it's possible.
Yeah, well, look, you explained to me before we started that the AFC Cup is, I guess, the equivalent of the Europa League in Europe.
Yeah.
Yep. So, look, good luck. It sounds like you've got a tough match ahead of you, but walk out there and channel Zlatan, I guess.
I do love it. All right.
Ryan, I really appreciate you joining us here on the Jetstream today. Thank you for taking the time out. Best of luck for the rest of the AFC Cup.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the interview, and hopefully the Jets can get back on track this year.
We hope so too. certainly to experience finals football again would be fantastic.
Yeah, it'd be perfect.
All right. Okay, Jets fans, look, if you want to catch us, you can catch us on Facebook, which is at Jetstream Newey, and also on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is at Jetstream Newey. All right, chat to you all again soon. Bye.